Hello and welcome to Beyond the Bio. This week, I'm super excited to be joined by Nick Redman, who is a voice coach and director. Stay tuned this week to learn all about the power of your voice, how to be more impactful, some top tips and tricks to make sure that you stand out for all the right reasons, whether you're speaking on the stage, on a podcast, or on your socials. Nick has spent nearly 20 years recording, speaking, and helping podcasters, speakers, and corporate professionals feel confident and at home on the mic. Her expertise has been featured on BBC and Times Radio and in The Guardian, The Irish Times, and Metro. As a voice coach and director, Nick works with everyone from startup founders to C-suite executives at multinational corporations, as well as household names and global brands, helping them refine their vocal delivery and connect creatively with their audiences. So, Nick, my first question is, what does a voice coach do?
So, there are voice coaches for many different things when it comes to the speaking voice and a singing voice. I specialise in people who speak on the microphone. So podcasters, people who are presenting, panels, hosts, broadcasters, things like that. A few comedians as well. I've got a lot of comedy in my background and I'm unfortunately married to a comedian. So quite a lot of connections there. But for me, I really help people not be scared of the microphone and to make sure that the voice that comes out when they turn the microphone on to record whatever they've got to record is easy, expressive, engaging. And my main remit, I suppose, in terms of voice is helping them prep their voice and get to know their voice so that when they turn the microphone on, they don't actually have to think about their voice at all. They can focus on the words and the impact they're trying to have and the story they're trying to tell.
This is so interesting, and I'm super excited to be diving into some specifics and get some advice from you about all of these things. I guess when you're younger, a voice coach probably is not the type of career that you see yourself going into. I can't imagine someone sitting with the careers advisor at school and saying, I want to be a voice coach. How the heck did you get into this?
So I was headed for the West End, Sophie. I was going to be a twirly. I made it there. To the little toe of the West End, and I was doing musical theatre. And then somebody somewhere was like, oh, you're Northern Irish, we need a Northern Irish voiceover. Will you come to the studio at this time? We'll give you £400. I was like, well, I'm in the West End, I'll take the £400 for an hour's work. So off I tootled, and I did my first ever voiceover job. And I'd spent my career prepping for the West End and it being very image focused, and it was very unsatisfying. And then I got in the voiceover booth and I had this weird like light bulb moment, and I was like, okay, this is just about my voice. And I just found that really fascinating. And then I got just obsessed with voice. So I went back to uni and I did an MA in voice studies and vocal pedagogy. And that was like the final little piece in the puzzle. And to be honest, I don't think I went because I wanted to be a voice coach. I think I was just fascinated by human voice and the potential of it. And that was a very intense, more academic than I was anticipating year, learning all about the human voice, really.
That is so interesting. What's the wackiest thing that you've done a voiceover for?
Oh, my God. The first ever job I did for my home studio was a really glamorous job about medication for kids who have constipation.
Oh, lush.
I've probably done quite a few things that I maybe would be embarrassed to talk about, in the sense that, you know, when you're younger and you're doing every job that comes your way, they're probably not quite kosher. I did get to play Finn McCool's mum for the audio guide tour at the Giant's Causeway.
Oh, cool. Which is pretty exciting. I've been to the Giant's Causeway.
Maybe you've heard me.
Maybe. I've not been for a long time, actually. My family are from Belfast, so I have been there. Yeah, that's fun. Obviously, your voice is such a key part of your personal brand. What are the biggest mistakes that you see people making when using their voice professionally?
The biggest thing I see and hear is people aiming to sound like what they think they should sound. So people aiming to sound more professional, or
their telephone voice.
Yeah, exactly. Or the person that they admire most, or the podcaster that they think is the best podcaster. People often try to sort of put on a voice. So when people come to me for coaching specifically for voiceover or presenting, a lot of it is actually undoing this idea that they need to sound a certain way and giving them confidence and empowering them to use the voice that they have. You know, particularly in, let's call it the regions, you get a lot of people who have spent a lot of time fighting against what you might call accentism, or the desire that their accent makes them less or is not valid. But a lot of the time, because we've not been used to hearing different accents. It's getting better now, but, you know, it's not perfect. So a lot of people, it's about saying, you can sound like you're from the Northeast, or you can sound like you're from Manchester, actually. And you don't have to sound whatever professional is, because professional sounding is different to everybody, you know? So mostly it's helping people and empowering people to sound like themselves rather than a version of themselves that they think is acceptable.
And presumably that's going to give them confidence right away, that confidence to be themselves. I remember when I lived and worked in London for 8 years or something in my 20s, and I remember thinking I needed to lose my accent a bit. And I've got a bit of a weird accent because my dad's from Belfast, my mum's from London. I went to uni in Leeds. I've lived in London for 8 years. So I'm kind of a bit random and I get accused of being from all sorts of places. But I do remember trying to knock some of that northeastern twang out when I was in London, because I had a few comments that were kind of derogatory, really, looking back. And now it's quite funny. I do spend a lot of time in London, and I almost try and be a bit more Geordie when I'm in London, because I feel so passionate about the Northeast that I want to, you know, champion what we're doing here and what we stand for. And actually, I'm really proud to be from here. So yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? And I think I've kind of experienced it from all sorts of different sides.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think people don't realise that their accent can be a real superpower or a USP for them. And it's a point of contact for many people. And if you're proud of how you sound and where you come from, you often end up making connections that you might not make if you're pretending to be someone else. You know, you go down to London and you eyelash your way through the whole thing, and someone goes, oh, my granny was from, or somebody was from. So I think we've got to sort of understand that our accent, firstly, like your accent, is, it's like a fingerprint of everything that you are. You know, it's sort of like our accents are our entire identity.
I really like that. And I guess this is potentially linked, but there are a lot of people who tell me when they come into our podcast studio to either record a podcast or record their audiobook, or even if they're about to present at an event, that they hate the sound of their own voice. So we'll often get people that want to record an audiobook, but they'll want a narrator rather than their own voice. And we try and persuade them that they should totally do it. But why do you think people hate the sound of their own voice? And actually, more importantly, how can they get over this?
Oh, God. You know, I had one viral TikTok in my life, and then I ran away because it's terrifying. But the title of that TikTok was, do you hate the sound of your own voice? And my inbox was flooded with people, but everybody has a real problem with it. And I think one of the reasons is science, acoustic science, in the sense that when we hear ourselves speak out and about day to day, we hear our voice both through the sound coming out of our mouth and going into our ears, but we also hear the sound through internal resonance. So the vibrations kind of buzz through our skull and all the gooky stuff in our heads. So we get this kind of, like, I suppose, human stereo input system where you're hearing yourself very differently. So there's an actual acoustic reason that you sound different, because then when you record your voice and you play it back from a speaker, all you hear is that one input through your ears. So there is an actual difference. And the way to get over that is to just keep listening to yourself.
I was just about to say that, because I hate watching myself, I guess, more than anything else, because then I'm kind of looking at all the stupid faces I make and cringing as well. You've got the double trouble. But I guess because I do Beyond the Bio every week, I have to listen to myself, because when we edit the episodes, I get them back and it might be that I want to tweak something in it. So I have to listen to myself if I want to then make those changes to the show. So I think I've just got used to it, to be fair.
Yeah, you've just got to immerse yourself in it. And I always say to new clients, whether it's voiceover or audiobook or podcasting, or even people who are doing content, you know, for media and PR and things, is take some time, diarize it, record yourself for a minute, listen back, cringe a bit, want to die inside, crawl in a hole, and then just keep doing it over and over and over again. And eventually it's like the differences get less and you hear yourself more the same. The other reasons I think some people hate their voice or hate the sound of their voice is because they've grown up in a world that's cultivated around sounding a particular way, and therefore they're not used to hearing their accent or their voice in the public arena. So then they feel like their voice is less valid, and that sort of breeds a lack of confidence and belonging, I suppose. So some of it is more emotional or trauma based as well. If you've got someone who had parents who were constantly like, keep quiet, keep quiet, stop talking, talk when you're spoken to, all that kind of stuff. You're
gonna, childhood traumas.
Exactly, yeah, you're going to sound one way. But if you grew up in a noisy house, you're going to have used your voice a bit more, so you may have a different relationship to your voice. So some of it's more psychological and, yeah, let's face it, trauma-informed.
So interesting. What are your go-to tips for sounding more confident, even if we're not feeling it, whether this be in meetings, on stage, or on a podcast?
I always think about the word confident, and I think it's a funny one because feeling confident and appearing confident are two very different things.
I agree.
So I kind of reframe it with my clients about being competent and comfortable. And for me, if you can get to a point as a speaker where you feel competent at the skill of speaking, which can be learned and practiced, and comfortable in yourself and your message and with your voice, then you're going to appear more confident and feel more confident. So those are the words that I use. And the main thing is practice. That's the dull, boring bit, is you've got to really get out there and speak as much as possible. And to be honest, the fact that we live in this kind of online world now is brilliant for practicing your speaking, because you can go live anytime you want. You can practice every day, and that's really good. From a voice perspective, I'm a big advocate, as a technical voice specialist, obviously, of getting to know your voice and how it works, understanding about your range and your resonance and articulation and your breath, and making sure that you're using your voice technically in a really efficient and easy way, so that actually when you're standing up there, you're not worrying about how you sound. You're focusing on the words, the storytelling, the emotional journey you're taking everybody on, and the impact they want to have.
So practicing, preparation, learning about your voice. Yeah. Really, really good advice.
Yeah. And I talk a lot about this idea of, well, a couple of things. Firstly, who and why are very, very simple, easy questions. Like, who are you talking to and why are you talking to them? And that who can be the person that happens to be in the room that you know is there. If it's a presenting gig, if you know it's a room full of accountants, then you're talking to accountants. You can frame your voice and your structure of your talk in a particular way. If you don't know who you're talking to, then you've got to think, well, who do I need to talk to? And that's the ideal client piece. And that's allowing yourself to cultivate a voice that allows you to share the message that you want to get to your ideal client. So knowing who you're talking to and then thinking, like, why the hell am I talking to them in the first place, is really good. Because so often when people come to me for help with presentations, they go, what am I going to talk about? And I'm like, well, why are you saying it? Start with why. It's starting with this, like, why am I there? How do I need to impact them? Why have they come? How am I going to help them? And then that can inform everything that comes before. And that helps with the intimacy.
So when you're helping your clients, you're helping them with the technical stuff around their voice. Are you also helping them put together their content?
Yeah. So funny enough, one of the things that's often the problem is that the writing doesn't serve the delivery style. So this happens a lot with podcasters. They'll write something, or a producer will write it for them. And it can be quite academic and quite formal in many ways. Yeah, I do a lot of corporate voiceovers coaching, corporate podcast host coaching. So, you know, they get the script, but they're like, I want it to sound chatty and conversational, but the script isn't. So I do quite a bit of like script consultation and editing for that. And it's the same with content, you know, it's about loosening it up or making it informal, or making that if they want to sound educational and like the expert, that's another way of writing. So it's a combination of prepping the voice, prepping the words, and then voice directing those two to bring together.
Very interesting. What are some common bad habits that damage the voice, and how can people avoid them?
Okay, this is where I get my step on my soapbox.
Yes,
She says drinking some water as if to demonstrate that that's the thing you should definitely do.
Well, I read that cold water is bad, shocks your voice. No?
Nah.
Is that a myth?
Yeah, this is myth-busting time, isn't it? So there's a lot of myths out there with voice. And the interesting thing about voice, like with all science, the research changes a lot. But the truth about anything you eat or drink, it's not touching your vocal folds. So it's not going to shock anything. When we take in something that is like lower than body temperature, for example, your body gets to work making it the right temperature. So actually, it's really not that big a deal. Like if you need cold water to feel satiated, then drink the cold water. It really doesn't matter. It's the same with tea. Hydration's key because it stops mouth clicks.
Oh, I really notice that sometimes when I have guests on the show. Yeah,
it's nerves. You see, I was just talking about this. When we're in fight or flight, our body stops the completely critical processes. And one of those is saliva. Like you don't need saliva to fight a woolly mammoth. So like it stops creating it. So then our mouths get sticky. So you just have to hydrate. And if you know you're going on the microphone for a PR opportunity or whatever it is, hydrate the days before, because it takes about 4 to 8 hours for the fluids to actually have an impact on your saliva.
So it's not just necking a pint of water before you do it.
You'll just need a wee then.
Which is not ideal.
No. But I mean, bad habits for me, just to come back to your question, obviously smoking, anything that is like putting chemically air and smoke next to your vocal folds is not good. Stress, things like posture can have an impact on as we both sit up for a little bit. Bad habits are mainly linked to tension. So tension's the enemy of a free and expressive voice. And whenever we're nervous, often that's when the tension creeps in. So it's noticing the physical habits you have when you're presenting and speaking to make sure that you can put your body in a way that supports the breath, which supports the voice, which supports the storytelling.
And I guess it's that whole awareness piece. So when I think about people that I think are great speakers, I think about their body language quite a lot, actually. And I think about some of my own nervous tics and what makes me look more nervous in front of people. And one of the things that always sticks in my mind is you've got to smile. You've got to smile and you've got to look at people. So yeah. I always kind of go tick, tick, tick in my head to do that, because I think when you see people that are clearly nervous, they just don't smile at all. And that's really hard to make that connection. So if you start smiling at people as you're kind of walking the stage, and I quite like to move around, I think that really helps. Mm.
For me, sometimes I think people feel like they have to do things for the sake of it because someone's told them it'll make them look like a better speaker or better presenter. So you often see people awkwardly doing gestures that they don't feel comfortable with, or they're like out of their comfort zone. And I think from my point of view as a voice coach and someone working with presenters and people pitching and podcasters, is everything that you decide or every decision you make creatively, whether it's a body movement or a smile or an emphasis on a word or to move across the stage, it all has to serve the story. So it's all about going, okay, we're smiling here because of this bit. And you're right, that welcoming piece, if you are a smiler, it's a really good way of making the connection. But similarly, if somebody doesn't like smiling, there's nothing scarier than like a mad grimace. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Coming back at you from the stage. Similarly, if somebody wants to stand still, that's fine. But if they want to walk around, that's also fine. So I think it's about understanding that there is no one size fits all. It's about what makes us feel competent and comfortable in that environment so that our voice can be free and expressive.
Mm. So it's working out again what is going to suit you, what's going to suit the audience, what's going to suit the story, because, you know, me smiling away might not fit the message sometimes. You know, if I think about when I'm doing a more serious talk. So I did one when we fairly recently opened our new Smart Work Centre, and I actually had to read some of my script because there were stats in there that were really important about the impact of unemployment in the region. So that's a serious topic. So would it be less appropriate for me to be smiling like a mad person? And actually it was more important for me to be reading some of the stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And there's some really interesting stuff around the art of rhetoric and persuasive speaking that can allow you to decide, okay, status-wise, where am I in this part of my speech? So there are points when I'm speaking where I'm like, right now, I'm the expert, I'm above you, I'm giving me all the information, and the audience is a slightly lower status than me. Then there's points in my speech where I might want to feel like we're all on the same together, like we're in this together. And then there might be points in my speech where I'm lower status, where I'm asking for their help, where I'm imploring them to do something. So, you know, stats might be a point where you might want to take the higher status within that. And then that informs your voice and your gestures in another different way. That comes into the creative direction and the sort of voice direction element of it.
Mm. Do you think people should adapt their voice for different platforms? So whether they be on a podcast, whether it's video content, whether it's speaking on stage, is there anything in adapting to the platform?
I think it's more about adapting to the message.
And the audience.
Yeah, the audience. Speak to the person that's in the room. Certainly from the pedagogical background I have as a teacher and a coach, there's no point going into every class with the plan that you're going to do and you're not going to deviate off the plan, because you get in the room and everybody's different and everybody's voice is different. And it's the same when you're presenting. You've got to be live and connect to whoever happens to be there and adjust things as necessary. I honestly think if we're aiming for a sense of being real, our real true selves, you can be that in any platform as long as you're honest about it. You know, just because I'm on TikTok doesn't mean I need to start doing silly dances.
Oh, I'm so not a TikTok.
No thanks.
Yeah. How can someone avoid vocal fatigue when they're speaking for long periods? So, for example, like a full day of meetings or recording an audiobook. This is something I struggle with, because when I did my audiobook recording, I had quite a limited time as to when I could do it. And I know that I'm loads better in the morning and I've got more energy. But I had to do full days for that. Have you got any tips around how we stay sparky and fresh all day?
Loads. That's probably what my book's about, in fairness.
Excellent. Well, we'll make sure there's a link to Nick's book in the show notes.
So the first thing is hydration. It's really important because it keeps the mucus on the outside of the vocal folds nice and slippy, and that helps them close easily and makes your voice much freer and really reduces fatigue. So step one is...
And would that be drinking on the day? Because you were talking earlier, weren't you, about making sure you're drinking in the days leading up to
it. It's like consistency. Yeah, I mean...
Consistent drinking.
Yeah, just constantly be having a sip of water. It's great for your skin as well, Sophie. It's really good. Yeah, it's really good for you.
Top tip.
Yeah, detoxing constantly. So the first thing is hydration. Second thing is posture and alignment. So it's about understanding what your body needs in terms of efficient alignment to allow your lungs to move, your diaphragm to move, and your body to support the breath, because that's the main thing that leads to vocal fatigue, is a lack of connection to the breath or inefficiency in the breath. And then a cheeky wee warm-up. Like, people think I'm mad, but I will do a voice warm-up before I even go into a social talking situation. So I know you're always out there networking and stuff, and I'm sure you know that, like, talking in a networking event is a high intensity kind of situation. So I always encourage doing a warm up in any event. Like, I have done warm ups before I've gone out with my friends, you know what I mean, on a social occasion, because it's releasing some tension and opening things up before you go into the intense talking situation is really, really powerful and really useful.
When sometimes I've got a big meeting or I'm coming in here to record a show, and if, particularly if it's in the afternoon, which is not my best time of day, the team, when we're sat in the office next door, they'll go, do some star jumps. Rachel will go, do 10. And I'm like, in whatever I'm wearing, do these ridiculous star jump movements. But it does help.
Yeah, it does really help. And your body informs your voice and your voice informs your body. So I could show you afterwards some exercises that could help you even more and that would still give you that nice rush and that nice exercise.
But less sweaty.
Maybe less sweaty.
Oh, it's been so interesting talking to you and hearing all of these tips and examples. I've got one final question before we finish. Who would you say are some of the best speakers or voices that you admire, and what makes them stand out for you?
Okay, I'm going to mention someone that you know, actually, because I saw them speak at Atomicon a couple of years ago. Leah Turner.
Oh, I love Leah. Yeah. And the thing, so we bought her business in
Yes, I know. I've been listening to the
She's
podcast.
Awesome.
Very exciting. So I saw her. I don't know if you know Atomicon. Amazing conference.
I've spoken at it twice.
Oh, nice. And there's loads of incredible speakers with loads of personality and lots going on. And forgive me, Leah, if you're listening and I'm getting this wrong or I'm remembering this wrongly, but I just remember her coming on stage really calmly and just sharing that she was actually quite overwhelmed and terrified. And she just stood still and she told her story, and it was incredible. It was captivating. You know, she'd come on after someone who'd been like bounding around and a double act who'd done something else, and it was all very energetic. And she was just like, I think she said something like, someone told me I have to walk the walk or something, but I need everybody to know that I'm really nervous. And it was amazing. And I think that's a really interesting example of how there's no one size fits all, and vulnerability is really compelling. And it's also, that was how she was feeling in the day, and if she'd tried anything else it wouldn't have worked for her.
That is so interesting. And Leah, if you are listening, I'm sure you don't mind me sharing this story. So Rachel and I obviously knew Leah, and we were at the event. We were outside with her. Like, she literally wanted to be sick and finds those situations so overwhelming. And not only has she got a great story, but I think it's that, and I hate the word, but it's that authenticity piece. Like, she was so real and, you know, says it exactly like it is. And that is her, and that's how she is when you meet her as well. And I think, for me, some of the best speakers are people that you feel like you've got to know them and it feels like a genuine connection. And I would say that with her. But that's so interesting that you picked her out, because that is a scary event, I think, to speak when you're on that main stage.
Oh, my God, yeah. And I think about that a lot when I speak at things, and I constantly think, I can only be me. Like, it's too exhausting trying to be anybody else. And if me is too much, you know, or me is too Irish, or me is too sweary or whatever, then you're not the client for me, you know.
Mm. Who else stands out?
Oh, you know who I used to love?
Used to?
Oh well, only because I've not seen them for a while.
Okay.
Do you know Mary Black, the Scottish politician?
Oh, yes.
I loved her because she was just...
Did she stand out? Am I right?
I think she's not a politician anymore.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's quite young.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
But she, again, impressive. Completely real. Yeah, didn't temper her accent, didn't try to be anyone else. She just had such passion for what she was saying. Mm. And she just stood up there and did it.
Mm. Yeah, good. Good to choose two strong women there. Yeah. Like it, like it. Awesome. So if anyone listening isn't connected to you, where's the best place for them to find you?
Probably LinkedIn, Sophie. I'm really, really going hard on the old LinkedIn.
LinkedIn.
Absolutely.
It's where it's at. I keep telling people it's where it's at. Awesome. Well, we'll pop a link to your LinkedIn profile in the show notes, along with a link to your website and your book as well.
Yeah, great.
Awesome.
And I've got a workshop. So I'm doing a vocal confidence for podcasting, pitching and presenting workshop at Bourne Studios on the 13th of March. So if you're interested in that, let me know and I'll pop you on the list.
Awesome. Great. Great stuff. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you're serious about growing your profile, take our free profile assessment quiz to see where you're at right now and get hints and tips on how to improve your score. You'll find the link to the quiz in the show notes. If you've enjoyed the episode, it would be mint if you'd subscribe, like, and leave a review. See you next Monday.